Now, I thought I'd conclude with a little anecdote that is slightly mysterious, but has a point that I think illustrates the main idea that I've been trying to communicate here. It tells of a young Chinese scholar named Chu, who with a friend went for a walk in the mountains. And he and his friend came to an old monastery, an old temple that had fallen down, and there were just a few walls standing. And in this, there lived an old monk, an old Buddhist monk. And this old Buddhist monk greeted the two young men when they arrived, and he showed them the walls and ruins of the temple. Now, up on one of the walls were the remains of a quite charming picture. And the picture showed a little town. And standing on one of the streets was a girl with her hair down, meaning she was unmarried. The married woman would have her hair bound up. And Chu, looking at this, just fell in love with that girl there in the picture. He was utterly enchanted by her. And before he knew it, because of the power of the monk, he was in the picture, and there was the girl. And she said, come in. And in he went. And they had a passionate love affair, which lasted for several days. And then her little friends, her companions, arrived, and they said, oh, and your hair is still down? You should put your hair up. So she did. And they continued to live this way in the village for a while. And then one day, a monstrous noise was heard outside, and there were some official officers coming to scout out foreigners and aliens. And there was a terrible commotion, and a young girl said, you better hide, you better hide, you better hide, you better run down here. And he started to run and hide, and pretty soon he came out of the picture. And he was standing right where he'd been before he went into the picture. And his friend, who had missed him, was delighted to see his return. And then they turned and they looked at the picture, and what do you know? The girl's hair was up. Now, I don't think I want to try to interpret this. I thought I would conclude with a brief reference to Zen, which I know has become rather fashionable recently. The word Zen, as you undoubtedly realize, is a Japanese way of pronouncing a Chinese word, which is Zhan. And this Chinese word Zhan is a Chinese way of pronouncing a Sanskrit word, which is Jhana. And the Sanskrit word Jhana means contemplation. Contemplation of what? Contemplation of what one ought to be contemplating, namely the divine presence that inhabits all things. Now, in India, this contemplation is represented usually by the Buddha sitting, contemplating, bringing the kundalini up, and so forth. This is the way of the monk, who leaves the world and turns inward and contemplates inwardly. But there is another way of contemplating. And this is the way of the landscape art and the Chinese art and the way of Tao, namely seeing the thing through all things. This is known as walking contemplation. You walk around. And when Buddhism went from India to China, it was gradually assimilated to the Chinese attitude toward life. And in the 8th century, this term was given. Dhyana, or Chan, meant rather walking than sitting. Then, this Buddhism, this Zen, or contemplative Buddhism, contemplation while walking, while being in life, went to Japan. And in the 10th, 11th, and 12th centuries, the high centuries of the Japanese medieval period, since it had to do with living life and experiencing life with alertness, it was a quite proper attitude for the knightly man. Just as in the European Middle Ages at the same time, you have the monk knight and the Christian cross, which is also at the same time the sword, held this way it's a cross, this way it's a sword. So also in Japan, you have the monastic discipline of the knightly monk. I spoke of Bushido, of the fencing and the sumo. Here in athletics and in combat, the principles of this contemplation are embodied. So Buddhism in Japan, or Zen Buddhism in Japan, became associated with this knightly way, the way of the knights, which is a very military way, I mean, strict discipline. Now, in the course of the centuries, there's been a great development of Buddhism in Japan in many, many directions. But by a curious irony, the stress on seated meditation today in Japan is maintained most strongly in the Zen monasteries. It is simply amazing to walk into a Zen monastery, into a Zen meditation hall, where these young monks are seated with the rigidity of images. And walking up and down is a man with a stick that long, it's over a yard long, over his shoulder, as though it were a weapon. And any young meditator who looks as though sleep were overtaking him gets this right on the shoulder with a terrific wallop. This is Zen in Japan today. It's a technique of meditation and realization that is extremely strict. And it is entered into voluntarily by people who want to be brought through to a realization, Zen contemplation through meditation. So that in the tradition of Zen Buddhism in Japan and China, we have two quite distinct types, one that of walking and the other that of meditating. But now please realize that when one walks in the Orient, one walks according to the rules of the society. It is freedom within the context of the society. And as far as anyone can see, looking at the Zen situation in Japan today, there is nothing like the Zen beat. The wild Dharma bums. The attitude is one of rather strict life forms. And the realization, the dhyana, the zen, the meditation, the contemplation comes in the context of the social situation. Zen is the great source of the tea ceremony. And I think that when one thinks of Zen, it should be rather in the way of the excessive discipline of the game of the tea ceremony than in the way of the sort of let it all go and drop everything and just seek nature in a direct romantic way. My personal feeling is that the Oriental lesson of art as play, life as play, and a difficult play which we love to play, is lost if Zen isn't understood in quite the way in which I presented it now. Thank you very much.
Listening to Concepts of Creativity in Oriental Mythology, the fifth talk by Joseph Campbell in the series entitled Eastern Way. This recording was authorized by the Joseph Campbell Foundation and produced by Electronic Educational Programs. Our theme music is by Acoustic Alchemy. For more information, please call the Foundation at 1-800-330-MYTH. That's 1-800-330-MYTH. Or you can visit us online at www.jcf.org. I'm Maura Vaughan. Thank you for listening.
This has been a HighBridge Audio presentation.